I'd like to call to order the Unalaska Crab Incorporated Board of Directors and Annual Meeting. Have a roll call, please.
Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman? Here. Mr. Longo?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Tungle?
Here.
Mr. Tudikoff?
Here. thank you. Need a motion to adopt the agenda and a second.
I'll make a motion to adopt the agenda.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Tungle to adopt the agenda. I have a motion. Oh, roll call, please. Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted. I have a motion for the minutes of previous meeting for the second to approve the minutes of November 14th, 2023 annual meeting and board of directors meeting of the Unalaska Crab Incorporated.
Move to approve the minutes of November 14th, 2023 Crab Inc. meeting.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Coleman, seconded by Councilman Longo. Are there any objections to adopting the minutes? Hearing no objection, the agenda is adopted. We have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-01, approving the regional landing and requirement relief framework agreement. We have a motion and a second.
I make a motion to adopt Resolution 2024-1.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Longo, to adopt Resolution 2024-01. I'll request a roll call vote, please.
Yes. Would you like me to introduce him here?
Hold that one there. There's no discussion.
Would you like me to introduce it?
Go ahead.
All right. This resolution of Unalaska Crab Incorporated authorizes the president to sign the Regional Landing Requirement Relief Framework Agreement, which Unalaska Crab has done annually for many years. Our city attorney reviewed and approved both the agreement and the resolution, and our natural resource analyst, Frank Kelty, authored the memo that's in your packet and is available on the line if you have any questions. And it's ready for adoption.
Do we have any questions or?
Oh, I apologize. I differ. There is one typo in the fourth whereas statement. It should be 2024-2025. It's at the very bottom of the screens up there. So we'll make that one typographical correction before we have you sign it, Mayor. Yeah. It's because it's the proposed agreement for 2024-2025. And that was just a typographical error, and we'll correct that.
Thank you. Any questions for? Hearing none. Hearing no discussion or questions, I'll request a roll call vote on Resolution 2024-01 on Alaska King Crab Inc.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
On a roll call vote of 6 yeas and zero nays, the Board of Directors of Unalaska Crab Incorporated have adopted Resolution 2024-01. Next item, we have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2402, appointing a registered agent. I have a motion and a second to adopt Resolution 2024-02.
I make a motion to adopt Resolution 2024-02.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson and second by Councilman Longo to adopt Resolution 2022-02. 2402. And I'll turn this over to Margie for our discussion.
So our registered agent for Unalaska Crab is presently Brooks Chandler, our former city attorney. With his retirement, we need to appoint a new registered agent to take service on behalf of the corporation if it's necessary. And Charles Cassiola is willing and able to serve as the corporation's registered agent, and this resolution will formally authorize that, and approval is recommended.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments? Okay, hearing now, roll call vote, please, on resolution 2024-02.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Thank you. On a roll call vote of six yeses and zero nays, the Board of Directors of Unalaska Crab Inc. have adopted resolution 2024-02. Having completed all items on our agenda, we are adjourned 6:06. I'd like to call to order the regular meeting of the Unalaska City Council. It's called to order at 6:07 p.m. on Tuesday, September 24th. May I ask the reading of the mission statement, Councilman Bell?
To provide a sustainable quality of life through excellent stewardship of government.
Okay, thank you. I have a roll call, City Clerk, please.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Bell?
Here.
Ms. Coleman?
Here.
Mr. Longo?
Here.
Ms. Luby?
Here.
Mr. Nicholson?
Here.
Mr. Tungle?
Here.
Mr. Tudorkoff?
Here. We do have a quorum. At this time, please join us as Councilman Tungle leads us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Councilman Tungle. Welcome all the visitors in chambers and those that are online. We've got quite a crowd here this evening. Thank you for being here. Special guests out there. They're all special.
Mr. Mayor, if I may, I'd like to recognize some visitors that we have from the Alaska Municipal League that are visiting us. We have James Marks and Angelica Casey and Danielle Meeker. They're here to put on some grant seminars tomorrow. And they met with city officials today, and we have some other meetings planned with them as well.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the city of Unalaska. Let's see. Next, the city clerk will administer the oath of office to Police Sergeant Patrick Bliss. Officer Bliss, if you'd please come forward, please.
Mr. Bliss, if you could raise your right hand and repeat after me, please. I, state your name, do solemnly swear to obey the lawful orders of my superior officer.
I, Patrick Bliss, do solemnly swear to obey the lawful orders of my superior officer.
To abide by the law enforcement professional code of ethics.
To abide by the law enforcement professional code of ethics.
To support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the state of Alaska.
To support and defend the Constitution of the United States and the state of Alaska.
and to observe and uphold the laws of the United States, the state of Alaska, and the city of Unalaska.
And to observe and uphold the laws of the United States, the state of Alaska, and the city of Unalaska.
I accept as a condition of continued employment as a police officer.
I accept as a condition of continued employment as a police officer.
The requirement to, at all times, abide by the rules and regulation of the city of Unalaska and the Unalaska Department of Public Safety.
The requirement to, at all times, abide by the rules and the regulations of the city of Unalaska and the Unalaska Department of Public Safety.
I affirm my allegiance to the people of the city of Unalaska who have appointed me as guardian of their lives and property.
I affirm my allegiance to the people of the city of Unalaska who have appointed me as a guardian of their lives and property.
I take this oath knowing full well the responsibility of my office.
I take this oath knowingly full well the responsibility of my office.
And I promise to act at all times with integrity, honesty, and honor as a law enforcement officer. So help me God.
And I promise to act at all times with integrity, honesty, and honor as a law enforcement officer. So help me God.
Congratulations.
Sign first, please.
So we can post it too.
Sergeant Bliss, I'd like to welcome you back to the Unalaska Department of Public Safety and present you with the badge of your office. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations, Officer Bliss. See you on the road there somewheres. Okay, next item, moving on, we have the mayoral proclamations. First on the list is item A, declaring October as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Whereas the people living and working in Unalaska have the right to have a safe, to be safe in their homes, workplaces, and community, domestic violence is widespread and devastating to many Alaskan families. We must combat these crimes. And whereas the physical and emotional scars of domestic violence affect men, women, and children across the state in alarming numbers, domestic violence violates an individual's dignity, security, humanity, and can even leave lifelong scars in the minds and bodies and spirits of the victims. And whereas the United States, approximately 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men have been victims of domestic violence, and 15.5 million children are exposed to violence every year. Whereas 1 in 3 adult women in Alaska have been victims of stalking in their lifetime, 1 in 9 Alaskan women 60 years of age or older experienced psychological or physical abuse in the past 2 years. And whereas the domestic violence remains a serious crime that crosses all economic, racial, gender, educational, religious, and social barriers. In Alaska, we acknowledge the disproportionate impact that interpersonal violence has on Alaska Native population, where 80% of Alaska Native women have experienced one or more form of violence in their lifetime. And whereas as Unalaskans, we must demonstrate with our words and actions that we do not tolerate intimidate partner violence. We'll continue to build alliances among community entities, businesses, and governmental, educational, and faith-based organizations that will strengthen our families and hold offenders accountable for their crimes. And whereas every October, we recognize the victims and survivors of domestic violence and remind them that they are not alone. We also recognize those working and volunteering for USAFE on Alaska Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, who stand ready to respond to those crises day or night. And whereas USAFE provides safe shelter, advocacy, personal support, and other services, the adults and children impacted by domestic violence in Unalaska and Dutch Harbor. Whereas USAFE seeks to prevent future domestic violence by providing education and outreach to people of all ages, and whereas only the coordinated community effort will put a stop to domestic violence. Therefore, I, Vincent M. Tutikoff, Sr., Mayor for the City of Unalaska, Alaska, do hereby proclaim the month of October 2024 as Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and urge all citizens to work toward the elimination of all violence within families, within the dating relationships of all kinds. So proclaimed this 24th day of September 2024. Now we'll hear a few words from Lynn Crane from USAFE. She's the executive director. Ms. Crane.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to keep this brief because I know you have a heavy agenda. Thank you, members of City Council. A report released by the Violence Policy Center last October, less than a year ago, demonstrated that in 18 out of 20, the last 25 years, Alaska was in the top 10 states per capita of women murdered by men. Alaska has also consistently ranked number one or number two among states with the highest rates of women murdered by men in the last decade. According to the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics, in 2021, about 34% of the women murdered in the United States died at the hands of a current or former intimate partner, while about 6% of the men murdered in the United States were killed by a current or former intimate partner. If you are fortunate enough to be in a safe relationship, you may think that domestic violence doesn't impact on Alaska. But every day in our community, people are committing the crimes of intimate partner violence, child abuse neglect, which is a form of domestic violence, and it does happen here, committing the crime of stalking, sexual assault, and child sexual abuse. By their very nature, these crimes occur behind closed doors, which makes it easy for people to believe that our community is immune. But domestic violence and these other intimate crimes can happen to anyone. I don't know if you remember, a few weeks ago I was here and I told you that in the fiscal year that just ended June 30, compared to the previous year, USAFE experienced an increase of 10% in the total number of services provided, a 6% increase in the number of people served overall, a 9% increase in the number of food assistance services provided, a 700% increase in the number of people needing travel assistance, either due to safety concerns for their well-being and that of their children, or because they just had no support system here, and a 523% increase in the number of shelter nights we provided. I don't want to sound harsh. Please don't assume that you know what is going on in anyone else's home or life. If you are worried about someone or something doesn't feel quite right, listen to your gut. Reach out to that person and be prepared to support them if they do disclose something. If you aren't sure what to say, call USAFE. USAFE is always looking for crisis line volunteers and shelter advocates. If you'd like more information on how to get more involved with our program, please give us a call at 907-581-3310 from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. Our 24-hour crisis line is available at 907-581-1500 anytime. You can also text us from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. daily at 907-359-1500. Everyone deserves to be safe, and we really appreciate the support that we get from the City of Unalaska, both financial and otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's see, moving to our next proclamation, declaring a Fire Prevention Safety Awareness Month. Whereas the safety of our community is of utmost importance and preventing fires is critical in protecting lives, property, and the environment. Whereas the house fires and the United States continue to pose a significant risk with the National Fire Protection Association, reporting that nearly 3 out of 5 homes fire deaths were caused by fires and properties without working smoke alarms. Whereas functioning smoke alarms reduce the risk of dying in a home fire by 55%, yet 17% of homes have smoke alarms that do not work, most often due to missing or dead batteries. Whereas the 2024 Fire Prevention Safety Month theme, Smoke Alarms Make Them Work For You, encourages all residents to regularly test smoke alarms, replace the batteries at least once a year, and replace any smoke alarms older than 10 years to ensure they are in proper working condition. And whereas the Unalaska Fire Department and Fire Prevention Program folks work diligently with all the people of Unalaska to address fire safety needs, emphasizing the importance of smoke alarm maintenance and protecting their health and safety. And whereas the Unalaska Fire Department will host a fire prevention open house on Saturday, October 12th from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m., inviting the public to learn more about fire safety, participate in demonstrations, and ensure that their homes are prepared for fire emergency. Now, therefore, I, Vincent M. Tudikoff, Senior Mayor for the City of Unalaska, do hereby proclaim October 2024 as Fire Prevention Safety Month and urge all citizens to take action in their homes to maintain smoke alarms and implement fire prevention strategy to safeguard our community. So proclaim this 24th day of September 2024. Speak. Okay, next item is the adoption of the agenda. May I have a motion and a second to amend the agenda?
I move to amend the agenda to change the order of the two items in the work session.
Moved by Councilman Longwood.
Second.
Second by Councilman Nicholson. Is there any objections to changing the order of the agenda? Hearing no objections, the agenda is adopted. Okay. Next item is approval of the minutes of previous meeting. We have a motion and a second to approve the proposed minutes of September 10th, 2024. As presented.
I move to approve the minutes of our previous meeting of September 10, 2024.
Second.
I'll second.
Councilman Luby. Seconds. Are there any objections to adopting the minutes of September 10th, 2024. Hearing no objection, the minutes are approved. Item 9, reports. City manager report is first up. I'll turn it over to Marjorie.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So my report's in the packet, and I'm happy to respond to any questions or observations you might have on that. But I will add that the mayor and I met with the Anchorage Field Office Director of USCIS on the 18th and discussed the city's willingness to allow the use of council chambers for citizenship ceremonies to make it a little more meaningful for the folks, and to also to coordinate with them for additional naturalization services in the community. While they were here, 45 new citizens were naturalized and sworn in, so that's pretty cool. And they were able to do the biometric capture for 8 additional applicants. So that saved 54 people from having to fly to Anchorage for those services. We've got lots of visitors in town, so a lot of the management staff is going to be pretty busy this week. But I'm happy to answer questions if I can about anything else in the report. I will point out that the interviews for the utility director candidate have been postponed to October 4th due to Mr. Honka's absence. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Are there any questions on the city manager's report? Comments? Okay, hearing none. Thank you, Marjorie. Next item is the board and commission minutes. There'll be no presentation. They're for council review, and any comments can be sent to the chairman of the committees. You have the PCR Advisory Committee meeting on May 20th, 2024. The Library Advisory Committee meeting was held May 30th. Those are the minutes that are in the, your packet. Next item is community input and announcement. This is time for members of the public to provide information to council or make announcements of interest to the community. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Roger Blakely from Director of PCR. Just for everybody's consideration, we have registration for our youth basketball program. It starts now. Sign up your kids now. The season starts on October 14th. It'll finish on November 23rd. We want you all to come. We need coaches, referees, all the usual, but come and be part of it. We have a special coffee house open mic. Will be on September 26th. That's Thursday, September 26th at Burma Road from 7 to 9. Anyone that wants to sing, you know, tell a story, do some poetry, juggling, stand-up comic, whatever you want to do, come on and be part of the coffee house. It'll be a fun night. We're going to try something a little different in the future. We're on Saturday, October 19th from 3 to 5, we're going to have a Teeny Desk concert and at the Fall Artisans Market, which will be at the Burma Road Chapel. It'll be a simulcast with KUCB. We will have live music. It'll be on the radio. It'll be broadcast over the airwaves, and also there'll be big screen monitors in the Burma Road Chapel so you can see it all live. We want you to be part of it and come and support our local vendors. And then we have a very special announcement. It's PCR's very special announcement. Anthony Longo, our councilman, his birthday is tomorrow. And we just wanted to wish him a very happy birthday. And we wanted to say also thank you for all the support that you've given us at PCR. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Roger. Happy birthday, Councilman Longo, tomorrow.
Thank you.
Okay.
Doc did. Virginia Hatfield is busy with cruise ships, so she asked me to make some announcements on behalf of the Museum of the Aleutians. They have a bunch of upcoming events. Saturday, September 28th, 12:30, Lunch and Learn with Ellis Berry is on internet privacy and security. That's at the library community room. Those have always been really good. Sunday, September 29th, 1 p.m., they have hands-on collections, ordnance at the museum with Kat Miller. That sounds dangerous. Saturday, October 5th, watercolor postcard crafts, 2:30 p.m. at the museum. Saturday, October 19th, 11:30, all about animal bones, archaeology materials. Saturday, October 26th is the opening of the KUCB exhibit. I think it's their anniversary exhibit, 6 p.m. at the museum. That should be great. Thursday, October 31st, their regular Thursday trivia at 6:30 on KUCB and on Channel 8. And Saturday, November 2nd, this is the big one, membership dinner and fundraiser, 6 p.m., Margaret Bay Cafe, Grand Aleutian Hotel. So they hope to see everyone there.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening. I'm Dawn Johnson with IFHS Clinic. I just want to give an update on our building project that we have going on. We will have representatives from the project management team and the architecture team in town next week. So we're going to be looking to have meeting with some of the city representatives, maybe the mayor and Unalashka Corporation. So I want to extend an invitation to any of the city council. If you would like to meet with them, come by and talk with us about what we're looking at and how the project is going, please reach out to me and we can set a time for you to come by.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sophia Stewart-Rossi. I'm with KUCB. I'm here to remind everyone that KUCB is hosting two forums this week for Onalaska's 2024 municipal election. Candidates will be answering questions before the election on Tuesday, October 1st. The City Council Forum is tomorrow at 6 p.m. right here at City Hall, and everyone is invited to attend in person, or you can listen live on 89.7 FM and at KUCB.org. The School Board Forum is the following day, so on Thursday at noon, you can listen live at 89.7 FM and at KUCB.org. We're also asking locals to submit questions they have for candidates running this year, so in order to do that, go to our website at KUCB.org and click on the banner at the top of our page where it says, "What do you want to hear from candidates this year?" You can also call KUCB during the forums at 907-581-1888. We look forward to your questions and seeing you at City Hall at the City Council Forum tomorrow evening at 6. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Now I'm here to represent USAVE. I would like to remind you about the Unalaska Interagency Cooperative Meeting, which is this Thursday, September 26th at 12 noon. Unfortunately, conflicting with the candidates forum. This will be our first meeting since our summer hiatus, and it's a nice way to touch base with what's going on in town, look for opportunities for collaboration, and identify emerging trends in the community. These informal meetings usually last about 1 hour and are open to anyone. And USAVE will be holding our annual Make a Difference Dinner for Suicide Prevention and Awareness this Friday, September 27th at the high school small gym from 6 to 8 p.m. Please come out and join us for a delicious, free and healthy dinner and an opportunity to learn about available community resources for anyone struggling with depression, anxiety, substance abuse, grief, postpartum concerns, or other behavioral health challenges. These issues have touched or will touch every person in this room and every family in our community, and it's essential that we demystify and destigmatize talking about them. According to the Centers for Disease Control, there is an ongoing mental health crisis among teens and young adults in the United States, and the youth of Unalaska are not exempt from this crisis. A lot of local young people always attend our MAD dinner because of the food. We get them in with the food, but they stay for the knowledge. And it's vitally important that they see you, our community leaders, at this event so that they know that you take mental health seriously, that you believe it's okay to talk about it, and that it's important to talk about it. For those of you that have never been to this event, I can promise you that you will not only have a delicious dinner, but you will also gain some knowledge that you'll be able to use later as you try to help someone that you care about or as you try to take better care of your own mental health. So for more information, call 581-1500. We do this event in collaboration with a lot of community partners. So we really appreciate those opportunities to work together. Thank you.
Good evening, council, visitors. For those who don't know me, my name is John Lucking, long-term resident of Onalaska, local business owner and former police chief with the city for the long term. I come forward tonight, not possibly being able to express everything I would like to in 3 minutes. So I'm hoping that my comments warrant enough concern that council may bring forward my position on an issue for future discussion on an agenda item that we can more thoroughly flesh it out. 3 years ago, I walked into the planning department after having long-term concern about junk and trash vehicles in Alaska. At that time, I had a specific concern about the safety issue of two lots in Onalaska that occupy about 200 junk piles of garbage cars. They're clearly defined in ordinance as a public nuisance. I was told in the planning department after expressing my concerns that I couldn't do anything unless I filed a formal written complaint against the property owners. I didn't want to do it at that time. It just seemed ridiculous that the city was pitting neighbor against neighbor for lack of enforcement of what was on the books as an ordinance. It's the law. I thought about that for a couple of weeks. I came back 3 years ago next month with a formal written complaint. I completed the complaint form, a narrative as to what laws were being violated, what the concern was, the issues, identified it as a public safety issue, satellite photography of some of the violations, as well as many other pictures. In the following 3 years, I've been back to the city every couple months or every few months, Not one time in 3 years have I ever been reached out to by the city in response in any way as to my complaint. I've sat down with city managers. I've talked to planning department. The only response I've gotten is it's a complicated issue. We'll deal with it or we're not dealing with it. In fact, I was told that the owners of the property hadn't even been contacted because no one really knew what to do with it. Probably guess what two lots I'm talking about. They're out the front door of City Hall and they're out the back door of City Hall and they get looked at every single day. So I'm hoping, again, that we can come forward. Right now, these lots have become so overcapacitated that they've reached breaking point, and cars are being stored around the community by a commercial business. And junk cars, some gratefully, are now being cleaned up and taken to the landfill. The problem that I'd like to have the council address is the policy of the city is that vehicles can go to individual owners to the landfill at no cost to the owner, as long as they're properly prepped. The volume of these cars will amount to hundreds of thousands of dollars of financial burden being shifted to the city unfairly, to the citizens, to local businesses, if language isn't corrected or it's not addressed as an issue in whole. So I have my written complaint. I'd like to provide this to the clerk so that everyone can be copied. I'd be willing to be part of the solution, not the problem. I have a little bit of expertise. I'd be happy to sit on a committee. I'd be happy to sit down and explain what I know of what the law and the ordinances are. Again, I'm not just complaining. My business in particular is very particular about abiding by the ordinances, being clean, taking care of junk. And it's just not fair to any business in town to have to compete to other people who don't incur the same type of costs. I could go on. My time's out. So I'll encourage you to read what I have to say. I hope it comes to an agenda so we can further discuss it. And I think we all, in conjunction with what was read at the very beginning, the mission, you know, have an obligation to do something about this problem. I'm willing to help. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Anyone else? Is there anyone on Zoom or telephone?
No, sir. No one indicated that they would like to make a comment.
Community input and announcements. Okay. There are no other comments and chambers are on the phone. Move on to the next item is the public comment on agenda items. This is a time for members of the public to provide information to the council regarding items on the agenda. If they don't want to wait until the item comes up for a regular agenda comment later during the regular agenda, you need to sign up with the city clerk. Please come to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name. Agenda items. Okay, hearing no comments, anybody on city on the Zoom or telephone?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. All right, next item is a public hearing. Members of the public may testify about any item set for public hearing. There are 3 minutes, time limit per person. Please come to the podium and use the microphone and state your name. The public hearing is now open for Ordinance 2024-11, approving a zoning amendment from the Marine Dependent Industrial to Open Space District with approximately 300.396 acres bordering the south side of McLeese Lake. Does anyone present wish to speak? Anyone, no one in chambers? Will anybody on Zoom or telephone?
No one on Zoom, sir, indicated that they wanted to testify.
Okay, thank you. Hearing no comments, discussion, the public hearing is now closed. Approximately a minute and a half. It's now 6:40. Next item is the work session. May I have a motion and a second to go into work session, please?
I make a motion to go into the work session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson, second by Councilman Longo. We are, if there's, if the council members, are there any objections to going into work session? Hearing none, we're in work session at this time at 6:41. Next, first item is discuss the draft damage assessment and restoration plan and environmental assessment for the marine resource shoreline habitat injured by the MV Celandang IU oil spill and potential comment by the city of Unalaska. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So during our last council meeting, I mentioned that this draft report had been published, and the mayor asked me to put it on the agenda for tonight. This is the draft damage assessment and restoration plan and environmental assessment for the marine resources, which is the shoreline habitats that were injured by the oil spill caused by the Celandang IU almost 20 years ago. So the mayor requested that we talk about that again tonight. So that's why we're here. Our port director, Peggy McLaughlin, is a member of the Aleutian Waterway Safety Committee and can share insight from that perspective. And I've also requested review of the draft report by our natural resource analyst, Frank Kelty, and also by our federal lobbyist, Sebastian O'Kelly. So I'll first ask Peggy to provide a broad summary of the four alternatives proposed by the trustee, and the, also to provide perspective of the Aleutian Waterway Safety Committee. And then our federal lobbyist, Sebastian O'Kelly, will give you a summary of the city's proposed comments. After you hear from both Peggy and Sebastian, we'd like to receive council's comments and suggestions on any feedback on the report. And the plan is for our lobbyists to compile and submit the city's official formal comments to NOAA. And we'll, Mr. O'Kelly will put together a letter to be signed by the mayor, and we'll submit them, you know, by the deadline. So at the end of the meeting, a directive from you folks to the city manager to work with our federal lobbyists to prepare and submit those comments would be the next step. So here we'll hear from Peggy McLaughlin, our Port and Harbors director.
Thank you. I was asked to give a brief overview of the damage assessment restoration plan as published in this document. This is open for public comment, which public comment closes October 3rd. So Unalaska being the had the biggest impact from the Celandang IU oil spill, I think it would be appropriate for council to at least take a look at this. And so we did some digging into some 20-year-old information just to make sure that council had a decent broad perspective of how their comments may be well-placed or if they want to comment at all. We, in the process of reviewing this, we reached out to several people who were directly involved with this, both in the immediate marine casualty incident, as well as in the aftermath of all the research and committee work and risk assessments post Celandang IU oil spill. We reached out to Chris Sladek, who was the city manager at the time, received input from him. We also worked with Frank Kelty, our resource analyst, Seb O'Kelly, as Margie mentioned, our federal lobbyist. And we also worked very closely with Marine Exchange on this, and then the Aleutian Islands Waterway Safety Committee, which was a committee that was born out of Celandang IU funding for the Aleutians risk assessment. Frank Kelty, Shirley Marquardt, myself, Mayor Bereshkin from Akutan, and Buddy Custard, with former Coast Guard, was the original members of the managing board, and I've chaired the committee since the beginning. I asked the committee to put this on our agenda on Monday so that we could get a review from both the National U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and also from NOAA. They provided a couple of brief reports to kind of give us a broad picture of this. I'm going to try to distill this into some really basic information and kind of give you a perspective of what we feel is important to not just the city of Unalaska, but the city of Unalaska through the Aleutian Islands Waterway Safety Committee. The Oil Pollution Act provides for when there is a marine, when there is an oil spill, that there is a draft assessment and restoration plan, along with a whole host of other things. But that is the stage of the process that we're in under the Oil Pollution Act. It kind of breaks it down into two components, where you have the injury assessment, so what was affected in the shorelines, and what is the appropriate restoration. This draft is prepared by trustees. Those trustees are basically, they are the two federal agencies, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, NOAA, and then there's four agencies represented from the state of Alaska, which is the Alaska Department of Law, DNR, Fish and Wildlife, or Fish and Game, and Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. They basically took a look at where the oil spill went. There's a whole, this is a 60-page report, so there's a lot of information there to digest, but they looked at what was the injured area, what was the affected area of the oil spill, and basically assessed that at over 1,400 acres, just over 1,400 acres. So the plan would be to come up with a restoration plan that was meaningful for those 1,400 acres. And they went through a whole host of processes and logistics. They kind of dialed into what would be alternatives. And there were five alternatives in this plan that were selected for their consideration. And those alternatives are no action and have natural recovery. So it just, you just let wave action and time clear out the oil from the shorelines. There was another kind of a mitigation type project, which was wrapping and sealing creosote pilings. There was another, the third option alternative was distributing additional build shocks and absorbent pads for future spills. There was the partial funding of the Aleutian Islands Waterway Safety Committee. And there was creating an Aleutian watch program and communication upgrades and transmissions. So that is a program that became the preferred alternative that is currently being kind of under the auspices of what Marine Exchange does today. Marine Exchange, if you're not familiar with them, they manage all the AIS transmissions, all the communication transmitters, and all the tracking information in the state of Alaska. They partner with almost every coastal community within the state of Alaska, as well as most of the marine agencies. So they work with the harbor associations, they work with, you know, coastal communities, they work with the Coast Guard very closely. Most of them are retired Coast Guard. So they have, this is their nonprofit. And this is kind of where their program lies. With that said, they're a critical maritime resource for the state of Alaska. So to land on this, the report basically is leaning toward prevention and keeping this from happening again, right? So during the Seladang IU, one of the original processes where they did the Aleutian Islands risk assessment, which came up with a whole host of, it was several years of work to determine things like areas to be avoided within the Aleutian region, which are, you know, sensitive to environmentally sensitive and with navigational hazards. With the funding left from that, the Coast Guard basically stood up what is now the Aleutian Islands Waterway Safety Committee. And our goal and our purpose is to continue to enhance and partner with organizations that protect the environment, protect our waters, and provide safe navigation. So our comments and our suggestions, we heard the presentation from Fish and Wildlife Service and from NOAA. We had some pretty lengthy discussions with Marine Exchange, and we believe that there is a combination of these alternatives, not just one preferred alternative, but there's a combination of these alternatives that would really benefit Unalaska, and that is the Aleutian Islands Waterway Safety Committee. Is they produce the standards of care and the best practices for maritime navigation within the Aleutian region. So kind of the cornerstone of what sets the standards of care for the technical aspects that Marine Exchange is working on. So we are in agreement with Marine Exchange in that there may be some opportunity to be a tenant of this preferred alternative where there's some funding for the Aleutian Islands Waterway Safety Committee. We are not a nonprofit. and there is no paid position within that. So we, our overhead is basically with NUCA Research to handle our administrative portion of meetings, bylaws, keeping our charter up to date, all those kind of things. So with that in mind, we are also partnered with Marine Exchange. They are on the Aleutians Waterway Safety Committee. So we're just opening this up for discussion for council to talk about what, you know, the kind of the focus of prevention, because that's what it's about. And that's kind of what the report distilled it down to, is that, you know, sending people out with absorbent pads onto the beaches isn't going to solve the problem. What's going to have the biggest impact is preventing it from happening again. So with that, I'm not going to pretend to have a lot of technical answers to technical questions, but I will say that in terms of kind of the broad brush of safety and navigation in the Aleutian regions, I'm happy to answer what questions I can, and hope that council will consider commenting, and commenting with a consideration for kind of a blend of some of these concepts or alternatives. So.
Thank you, Peggy.
Thanks, Peggy. I was sitting in on that meeting, listening to the comments that were being made. And I guess my main question, do you ever figure out what the funding source was going to be? And my other question is, what did the Coast Guard have to say about non-monitored vessels, almost over half of them being non-monitored, going through to a foreign country? Do you get any answers from them on that one? I know it's option number 3 or 4. I support that one. I also support option 5 as a monitoring incentive. So those are the only two I was really concerned about, and I don't know who else was listening in, but comments from the council.
I'd be happy to answer that if you'd like, or if you'd like me to wait. So the funding source, and I don't have an amount, but the funding source is the National Pollution Fund. And the, as you know, if you're listening on the meeting, the Fish and Wildlife and NOAA did not have a budget set for that. And I don't know what that pot of money looks like in terms of amount, but that is the funding source. In terms of the Coast Guard and the comments between the Coast Guard and Marine Exchange on the vessels in innocent passage, there is nothing that requires them to have the tracking on, but part of this program would develop a database where they have emergency contacts for them, their satellite phone numbers, their emails, their parent companies' phone numbers and emails. And some of the enhancement of this system is transmissions that allow a further reach with Channel 16. So there's nothing in the in the IMO that states they have to have this tracking system on if they're in international, you know, if they're not calling a U.S. port. But that's the best approach. That's the launching point for that approach. The vessels that they do have some regulations in the work for are international vessels that are calling a U.S. port. And they are technically supposed to have AIS monitoring on, and they're working on some regulation to strengthen that. So that's the best information I have on those two questions.
Well, thank you. I think the city council needs to consider talking to our congressional people and put it into law requiring any vessel coming through the Pacific and into the Bering Sea be registered. We don't know what they're carrying. The way things are today, we're running into a lot of military issues out on the far western Aleutians, as you can see on the news. And the activity we've seen here in the last month is going to increase. Some of these boats are coming from different parts of the world, and we don't know what they're carrying. We don't have any idea what they're, like the battery incident we had here a year ago, created a lot of problems in our community, health and safety issues. I think we need to talk to our congressional people when we go as part of our travels to Washington, D.C., make it a point to put it on our agenda for that discussion with Seb and whomever.
Can you all hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, folks. I'd also like to welcome Rick Marks from our firm, who's who's participating as well. So I had a chance to talk to Peggy and Margie, Chris Laddick, Frank Kelty, and get some of the history. I do remember it a little bit, but those you all have lived it. So I think we can add this to the congressional agenda, absolutely, for when you come in December, to raise with the delegation, and then also go see the Fish and Wildlife Service and the NOAA trustees to find out a little bit more about their plans, how much money they're going to consider approaching the National Pollution Center for, and then seeing if we can get a blend of the alternatives that you know, Peggy and Margie have articulated. So, I remember the Genius Star, you know, because I was on Christmas vacation in Ireland. So it was an 11-hour difference and getting those calls. And so we really need to get some improvements in the tracking system. One of the recommendations through the draft assessment, I think, is to use satellite technology more. So being able to track vessels remotely via satellite for those vessels that don't have AIS on them. So I think that's part and parcel of it. But we need to learn more about what their plans are. We need to make sure that they collaborate and consult with the city and other Aleutian Island communities, and that they work with, the Waterway Safety Committee. It's an existing entity, and the Marine Exchange. Both have, you know, missions that are similar to what they're proposing in this plant. So we need to work on that to bring that all together, and then look at some kind of legislative or regulatory changes that put some forcing action on the foreign vessel owners to provide more transparency about their cargoes, their locations of their vessels, so that we can have a better sense of who's coming and going through your waterways. So that's it in sum. Rick, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, just quickly. Can you hear me okay, Mr. Mayor?
Very fine. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Thank you. It was just back on the funding issue. We learned on the call the other day, you know, that NOAA submits this plan to the Oil Spill Liability Trust Fund for review, approval, and funding. So I got the sense there's a bit of a competitive aspect to that. So we may, at the appropriate time, want to decide amongst ourselves whether we want to approach the delegation, if it's appropriate, to get a letter of support for our plan, to give us the best shot if there is some competition with that. So just something to keep in mind going forward. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Councilman Coleman.
So before I begin, just disclosure, I'm a managing board member for the Aleutian Islands Waterway Safety Committee also. And I would have to say, I would concur, you know, they want to create another program to do that, something to fill a niche that maybe an existing entity can do, or at least expand to, or something, because, you know, just like anything, it's difficult to raise monies once you got a group going, even if it's a nonprofit, and you'd hate to see a program go up, get flushed with money, and then can't continue its mission because, once again, you know, you're asking stakeholders, whoever, to help you with it. So I would agree that finding maybe some kind of other way, you know, some kind of what you guys are discussing, not just creating a whole new program, maybe find some ways like with the Marine Exchange. Excellent, you know, find that problem. And I agree with I agree with the whole point of looking at prevention, because that's how you learn from your past, and how do you try to protect what you've got. from incidents in the future. So I agree with the motive and the plan and the direction that this is going. I'm just not sure that creating a whole new organization to deal with a specific aspect is the best use of the funds.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Hunger.
With this incident that we had, it seems to me that every time this thing happens is when a boat or a ship had a problem. And they always ended up inside our zone. So how can we prevent that instead of bring them here? Because we can avoid a lot if we don't bring them here. But being close to the Pacific and the Bering Sea, we're the closest one and we got the best dock there is. And they can hide pretty good where we at. But I don't think we can deny them access if we if they're in trouble. And a lot of times this got to do with the weather. They sit in there while waiting for parts or waiting for help. And weather comes around and it just tear them apart. So I've seen the worst one too, a Kurusima back in the, I don't know, early 90s. And Selenda Ngayu, it should not have happened if we did not get in there, but it happens. So the only concern of mine is throwing them inside our zone. We're waiting for trouble to happen. We're lucky on those battery ships that the weather cooperated on us. We did not get a real bad weather. It could have been a disaster in this community if those batteries leaks or ended up in our bay. So
you do hit on a really important piece. Obviously, I think prevention is the best approach to this. I fully support that. I do think that, you know, as the council is discussing this, considering a blend of some of those options gives us a comprehensive package of prevention. And we can do that. Like in the case of the Seladang IU, they were having problems. And by the time they were able to notify local authorities, it was too late to respond appropriately. And they were in heavy weather and in a really, really sideways situation. In the case of a battery boat, you know, and in those cases, we are what they call a preferred port of refuge, which means it's a case by case basis, right? We're not a preferred port of refuge. We're a preferred port of refuge or potential port of refuge, which means the Coast Guard's going to look at the resources around them and they're going to make a call based on the stakeholders on what's available to them. In the case of the battery board, we don't know what the cargoes are. So to the mayor's point, having some kind of regulation come into place down the line where we have some kind of visibility of what kind of hazardous cargoes are moving through and near our waters is an important piece. But when a vessel, you know, tries to deal with storm avoidance or they're in distress, the prevention piece of that, the ability to track them, to communicate with them, to get resources to them, like tugs, is critical to preventing a major disaster and loss of life.
Okay, thank you. Who else? Anyone else? Questions, comments? Thank you. I think for our assistant city manager is making notes over there for our next get together for the meeting in Washington. That's hopefully it'll be on our list.
Yes, and we talked to our lobbyists about that earlier today as well. So I think the next piece, our lobbyists and Peggy and I have heard, you know, the comments that have been made tonight. And so at the end of the meeting, if we could get that directive to the city manager to work with our lobbyists to prepare and submit those comments, we'll get that taken care of and we'll get a letter and we'll have the mayor sign it and we'll submit it. We don't have another meeting before the deadline. So that, you know, it's not going to be a situation where we're giving you the letter and letting you proofread it and all that kind of stuff. But I think we've got a pretty good handle on where we need to go with that letter.
Councilman Coleman?
You need a directive to put together a...
I don't. No, we'll do it anyway. But
okay. I thought you said you need a directive.
Well, you guys seem to really like those directives to the city manager, so that's why I suggested that. But if you just nod at me and tell me you want me to do that, we'll do it.
I think it would be appropriate to have a director because we're looking to have some discussion with our delegation and this council. The city council needs to give some direction, do this, this, and that. It may not be a priority, but it needs to be discussed. NOAA is involved, the Fish and Wildlife Service, and the U.S. Coast Guard. All three of those entities, in my opinion, need to have some kind of say in funding if to get this done. If not, we're just wasting our time.
So, Mr. Mayor and council members, Rick and I did draft a federal priorities memo for you all to consider. We actually drafted it before this Fish and Wildlife Service NOAA report had come out. So what we'll need to do is we'll go back and amend our priorities, our priority recommendations to you guys to include this as part of the priorities for your visit in December and for next year. And then we'll resubmit that memo. And you can consider that memo at your next council meeting. But in the interim, we do need to get these written comments into the Fish and Wildlife Service and NOAA because their public comment period does close October 3rd. So we can accomplish both of these things. And we'll work on that, drafting that letter with your staff. Rick and I will work on that. And then we will amend the memo to add this as one of your federal priorities as well. So you'll be able to consider that at your next meeting.
That's great. Thank you.
Yep.
Any further questions? Comments? Okay. Now we will receive public comment. Since we have council discussion, public comments are now open. 3 minutes. In chambers or in on Zoom or telephone?
No one on Zoom, sir. Not for this item anyway.
Okay, thank you. Any further questions? One more time before we move on. All right, thanks. The next item B is discuss ordinance change to allow APV use on public roads in Unalaska. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So back in June, the council directed the city manager to provide a proposed ordinance to allow APV use on public roads in Unalaska. And tonight's discussion is in response to that directive. One of our attorneys, Sam Severin, prepared a draft ordinance for your consideration and a memorandum to guide this evening's discussion. Both of those items were in your packet. The staff memo that was also in your packet outlines the past actions of council over the last couple of years. APVs are not presently allowed on city roads, and the draft ordinance in your packet changes that and provides a new definition for APVs. If APVs are allowed, there are other things that council may want to consider, such as fines, helmets, speed limits, parental responsibility. Those are just, you know, other topics that the city attorney brought to your attention in his memo. So Mr. Severn's on the phone, and so we'll turn it over to him and let him lead the discussion on that. Mr. Severn?
Yeah, thank you. Sorry, my camera, I'm having a moment of technical difficulty here, but
I've lost you there.
Okay, am I on now?
Yeah, you're on. Well, we can hear you.
Okay, I'll start with that.
I've lost you there. Okay, am I on now? Yeah, you're on.
No. And Sam, I wouldn't worry about your camera. We've got your memo up on the screen.
Okay. I feel like I'm kind of echoey too, or delayed.
There's no echo here in chambers.
Oh, okay. I'm hearing it back to me from what I said a minute ago. So I'll just go ahead and go though. So What I've drafted is a relatively bare bones ordinance that largely just does a couple of things, which is to essentially just make all-terrain vehicle use legal. That would only be on roads where it's less than 45 miles per hour. The memo, I think, is particularly useful because it talks about the laws that are in place without the city having to do much more, that are just state laws already regarding driver's license, vehicle registration, and so on. That list is there. But what I really wanted to discuss is down below the very brief ordinance that I've presented is just to say for now that that all-terrain vehicle use would be legal on roadways. If we go down to the next page of the memo, there's a handful of different communities that have done this. Like one of them is Valdez, for example, and I borrowed from some other areas, but a couple of considerations. There's all kinds of different considerations, but helmets is one. Right now, the current law does not require drivers to wear helmets. It only requires passengers to wear helmets. And the city could decide, that's a particular area where the city could say, hey, the risk is going up a little bit of adverse interactions between all-terrain vehicles and bigger vehicles. So we want to make everybody wear helmets, or everyone under 18, drivers and passengers, must wear helmets. That kind of thing is one of the options. A common other theme that I just throw out there, just I'm just bringing these to your attention. I don't know that I recommend any of them necessarily. They're all policy calls. Parental responsibility is another thing that's commonly seen. I put a example in there from Valdez that may not be the best example, but trying to say that parents have to monitor their kids' use of all-terrain vehicles. And some of those might not be the most enforceable. It can be kind of hard to cite a parent for something their kid did, but it's a common thing as something to consider. Another one that gets a little trickier, though, I just thought I'd put this in there, is modification of speed limits. You know, this is allowing, it would be, if we default essentially to the state law, then all-terrain vehicles would be allowed on roads up to 45 miles per hour. If the council, using its kind of local knowledge, said, hey, there's a road that that is 45 that causes a particular problem, it could cap it at 35. Or if there's a particularly congested area that you wanted people to avoid, you could do those kind of things. So there's, like I said, right now, what I have drafted, just for largely discussion's sake and a template to build from if we want to, is pretty bare bones. If it were adopted, it would allow the all-terrain vehicles, but would not, and just kind of default to state law for everything around that. I would note that what I did was I modified it to all-purpose vehicles in the ordinance. That's the language the state uses, that when they put the new regulation in that allowed cities to opt in or opt out of this, they created a definition of all-purpose vehicle. It's quite confusing, but I do think that if we're trying to gravitate toward being more in line with the state law and then getting on the same page with that definition, we all kind of have different ways of referring to these as ATVs or quads. All-purpose vehicle, frankly, isn't one of them that anybody uses, but that's what the state settled on. And so it's a little cumbersome, but the idea is just to get it to sync up with what the state's saying and come up with a unified definition. So,
but that's the state settled on. Yeah, so it's a little cumbersome, but the idea is to get it to sync
So with that, I think, you know, if we want to dive into the ordinance or any of the questions, I'm glad to answer questions and do what the city would like. One thing you won't see in the draft ordinance is we would have to do a little bit of work on the fine schedule. That's largely technical. And I just haven't done that at this point until we know what changes need to be made. It's just a little extra work that I'd rather do once we have settled a little more on something. But that's a technical piece that's not in here. But to allow officers to write citations, we would need that.
Thank you. Any questions or comments at this point? I don't have any right now. I will make my comments known later. Councilman Luby, then Councilman Bell.
Yeah, all these different proposals in this. I'm just wondering why we wouldn't just follow the same laws as a motorcycle. A motorcycle is less transparent than a. Side by side. Those are a little bit bigger usually. But a motorcycle is hard to see a lot of times. There's already rules in place for motorcycles. And the department also already has on the books to be able to write citations for breaking laws with motorcycles. So I'm just kind of curious why we wouldn't follow that same. The same line of thinking as all. That's kind of what I was thinking.
A question for someone? Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I just wanted to get a few of my thoughts out here on this. First of all, and the reason for bringing this back, I know several of us councilors signed on to bring this back as on the agenda. One of which being when this was discussed before in the first reading, it got voted down not because of the merits or because of the discussion that was had about the ordinance change. It was voted down on a technicality because a phone call dropped. So it never really got a fair vote, I guess, at the council level as to whether to move forward or not on it. But the other issue that has happened over time is many people have approached me, and I think some of the other counselors, you can speak on that, as whether this ordinance was dead or not, or if it could be brought back up, or because of the support for changing this ordinance. So to bring it back, have a discussion, and if nothing else, at least get an honest vote on this that, you know, doesn't lose because of a technicality. I would make the same comments, you know, when you want to try and make regulations and all that, I would be lean towards keeping it simple, keeping it in line with what the state has done, maybe learning from what other communities have done, and if there's problems that have arisen, what were the solutions or what were the problems, or if there's been no problems, it just gives us a yardstick as to see, you know, how these ordinance changes have affected communities over the last, you know, couple of years. And I guess my last comment would be just, you know, the issue of parental responsibility, modification of speed limits and all that stuff, I think are separate issues that kind of start muddy in the water on this. And I think they're addressed already in statute. But helmets, I am a firm believer in helmet laws. That would be my preference as far as that. But I'm interested to hear from other counselors and feel for where everyone's at on this. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Councilman Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm for this. This is something that in
actually Tacoma, Kent, Renton, and Washington State. We can do it in there. Most of the places in Alaska, the ATVs and stuff are legal to ride around on the streets and stuff like that. This isn't something that we're saying to open up the door that we, you know, start riding off roads and stuff like that. This is, you know, just for basic use on the roadways. And, you know, I'd love to have a side by side here. This isn't a cheap mode of transportation. These are, you know, expensive pieces of equipment. Now, it's, you know, I'm all for the helmet laws. I'm all for the speed limits. I'm all for the citations that you would give any other vehicle as well on the road if you break the rules. And for licensed vehicles here in Unalaska, insurance, it's just, you know, I am for possibly having this go through. Thank you.
Thank you for the comment, Councilman Longo.
Yeah, I also am for this, seeing this move forward. It is for on-road use only. It is not to be going off the road, and this will open up other modes of transportation, cheaper modes of transportation, mini trucks for companies, better fuel economy. I think this has been coming.
Okay, thanks. Councilman Coleman?
Hey, you have a specific question about what the ordinance language here. So, and it talks about section two, section three, and B, on B, paragraph B, public property, which is not beneficially designated as an area for all purpose vehicle operation. So we're going to have to designate somewhere else about what is okay for all purpose vehicles. It just seems like maybe I'm missing where this is going to, these things you can't do.
Yeah.
So asking for it. Yeah. So go ahead.
No, I think I can answer that one. What that one is talking about is the public property portion. How I understand that is to say you can't go, tear around on the city park or city soccer field unless the city decided to take a piece of parkland or something and call it an off-road area, then otherwise you can't be on that. So driving around in a city park is how I understand that. And that would be prohibited.
Okay. And so I guess then follow up with the city is like, then, you know, we're talking about roadways. So then, or is the city looking at restrictions on, like in the parking lots or anything that, it just seems kind of a technicality on the verbiage and language. And I just want to make sure that if we move forward with this, it's clear. So we're talking about roadways, but then we talk about public areas not designated as ATV use, then all city property that is not a roadway then has to be designated as such.
The use would be prohibited unless it's designated as such.
And so the city is prepared to designate all their parking areas as okay to use an ATV?
Well, right. As Sam said, he took this to mean like parks and trails and those sorts of things, not roadways. So Sam, is that a change that needs to be made to this code? Because
I appreciate that. I guess I hadn't read it that way, but somebody could look at it that way. So let me, I'm just going to highlight that and see if there's a way to tackle that. I mean, I do read it to pretty clearly mean something like, like a park or something, but there could be an argument that, hey, this is a, you can drive it down the road to the city hall, but not into the parking lot because that's a public space. That's not a highway. Is that kind of the argument that's what you're envisioning, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just verbiage and,
yeah.
thing. It's good to have all this clear. It just seemed like now you have to designate areas that are appropriate. So, maybe muddling things too much, or maybe somebody has a better take on this kind of perspective. But that's just what I.
No, I appreciate that. I mean, I don't think that that's necessarily a wrong consider. You know, I think that's worthy of consideration. I'll take a look at it when we go back to put it to final and see if something needs to be done there. It may be that I'm just not thinking fast enough, and that's kind of taken care of some other way too. But it's a good point.
I've got Councilman Tungle and Councilman Luby.
Yeah. I'll be open on discussion of this. I'm more concerned on some safety issue on how it goes on our main road with all the blind spot cornering and everything on, like Deadman's Curve and all these other, especially when we get busy on a pickup season where we got a lot of those 10-wheelers that are driving around holding stop and. It's more of a, my concern is more of a safety issue, but I'll be open on discussion on bringing it back. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman Luby, then Bell. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I guess, again, I think there's laws on the books to take. I don't know why we're really need to create all these different things just for an ATV. If we follow the laws of the books of licensed vehicles now, whether it's a licensed car, a licensed motorcycle, or, why can't we follow those same laws and they apply? We don't allow, a car to go off road, really. I mean, they might, motorcycle, or, we're talking about the roadways. But again, creating all these new laws, I think it gets so technical that, it doesn't make any sense to me when we already have the laws there. So I would make it as simple as possible. So then you don't have to try to say, looking at the one thing that Councilman Coleman just pointed out, there's, with that in there now, do we have to start adding different stuff? But we don't do that for a motorcycle. We don't do that for a car. So why is there a difference between the two? Why are we making up specific rules just for this? Because I think the intent here is to be able to drive it on the road. We're talking about getting in your car at your house and driving to the grocery store or, things like that. But do we need all those extra rules because it's called an ATV and not called a motorcycle? Two wheels, four wheels, but you got a car that has four wheels. So I don't know. To me, it's just the whole thing is kind of muddy in the waters. But I mean, I'm in support of, being able to, drive things to the store. I think we already, I said this before, I think we have a lot of equipment that runs on our roads. And so, thinking about the big trucks and everything, well, we have top picks, we have forklifts, we have all kinds of things that are running around on our roads all the time. I get behind forklifts all the time and I have to watch out for them because they're on the roadway, even though they don't have authority to be on the roadway. They're not even licensed, but there's been times I've come up around a corner, the S curves or whatever, and had them. But if I'm driving the way I'm supposed to be and paying attention, and if I'm not going over 30, I'm not going to have a problem stopping for them. And it's really not any different. And, and I know that a lot of people would be concerned about driving off road. And I know that OC would be concerned about that. And they've expressed that before, and I'm concerned for that too. And motorcycles do the same thing. Even cars can do the same thing. And, and it's enforcement of our laws. And that's what we really need to work on, is enforcement of our laws, versus hindering everybody else. Why would we penalize everybody because one person's a bad apple? We need to take care of that person. That's what we need to do. I think we can make it feasible. So, but I don't think we need to muddy the waters. But I will be in support of letting people drive them anyway, if we can figure out how to do that.
Yeah, thank you. Councilman Bell.
Yeah, I think Councilman Libby kind of touched on where, what I was going to say as far as, you know, treating APVs the same as a motorcycle. We're not going to condone a motorcycle coming out here doing hot laps around City Hall any more than we would a car or an APV. You know, it really comes down to just, in my mind, a quality of life issue. You know, it'd be nice on those rare 60 degree days here or 60 plus degree days to hop on my ATV and be able to ride to the store, pick up some groceries, or be able to ride to work and back, you know, just as I would a motorcycle. It's that same freedom. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Coleman.
Go ahead. Thank you. So, yeah, if this moves forward to council agenda as a ordinance reading, I guess there's a couple things here. Is one, in the memo, as I noticed staff made no comment to support yet in previous. I mean, obviously it was different staff, but in previous memos that it was supported. And so what I would like to see moving forward when we come to discussion on this is, you know, the major safety issues. I'd like to hear from public safety. I'd like to hear possibly from any other public safety entities or any other that might bring forward as the merits of the safety aspect of this. And then that's my obviously concern at this point. And if there's any kind of evidence to corroborate the use, as it's already been statewide for a couple, 3 years now, you know, is there anything, data to support that this can be implemented safely and what kind of communities they are in? So there's a fair amount of information. I mean, we're just focusing on the language of the ordinance and where this is going right now. So it's, I don't, you know, not my intent to go into that or ask, but I think in the future that would be great to be able to make a good sound decision on this.
So this is Sam, just to recap, this has been really helpful. Thank you. And it sounds like I had some of those other ideas. I included them in the memo. Just, I was looking around and gathering some different notions of how other places have done this and what might be a good idea. In part, if people just wanted them, it sounds like nobody's really enthusiastic about adding more, and that's good direction, if I'm understanding that correctly. And that can always be done 2 years, 5 years later, too. I mean, there's no reason we can't go in. But another, as we're talking about something like, what I did was I really left the existing code as intact as possible, just to make it kind of the lowest impact. Really, if you strike through highway, essentially you accomplish permitting them. And so I just kind of left everything else alone. Now that we're talking about it, it does appear that maybe like the public property, that section B that exists in the code, as people are talking, there might be some wisdom to that, that you can't go tear up, you know, city park anyway. So maybe we don't even need to say that. I'd like to just explore that as I can take another run through it and make sure that there's no reason that needs to be in there, and maybe see if we can slim it down some more. Sounds like what people would like to do.
Okay, thanks. Any further comments? But I'm not in favor of the ATV changes, only because I think there has to be a better, more information regarding the safety issue of driving a, and you call it ATV, and basically it's a recreation vehicle other than a four-wheel drive motorcycle. My concern is the biggest thing is the safety. I don't see where, at what age you're going to start kids on these things. There's a requirement in there. I can't. We have to set it ourselves or what?
Driver's license.
No, I believe it's 16 for this purpose, and it's just kind of by virtue of state law.
Okay. Then the responsibility issue regarding 16-year-old to 20 or 18, 21 or 18, does that falls on the parent or guardian? Like responsibility for license, I mean, for insurance, safety, turning signals, lights, and everything else working. I mean, who's going to be not a 16-year-old kid? They won't take that responsibility. They'll still drive it, and they'll be driving at nighttime without lights. And I'm really concerned about something like that. I mean, not saying it's going to happen, but I was around when there were motorcycles running up and down the street, and we did not have paved roads. And going 50, yeah, you get kind of hurt when you go sliding into the side of the hill or off the road, you know. And they say 45. How are you going to keep them at 45? I've seen vehicles, even people driving today, and 16-wheelers doing 35, 40. And they come up on you like, where'd they come from? You know, and it's going to happen with a four-wheeler. My only concern is a safety issue at this point. If we can clean up or get some more, because this is a work session. Get more detail, maybe even have a work session to answer these questions for myself and for the community. I can't see where four individuals can make a decision for the community on safety. So I'll not speak to the issue of ATVs. Any further comments? Okay, thank you for the information on the regarding the APVs, and I hope that we'll get a better once you get to review it, Sam.
Thanks. Yeah. Yep. You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anyone on Zoom or telephone?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, we have Mr. Travis Swangel, who would like to make a comment.
Good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, Mayor, Council, staff, Travis Swangel. I'd like to speak in support of this ordinance change. I feel it's important to be open-minded about how individuals transport themselves around the community. It's a small town. Speed limit is 30 miles an hour. There's no reason why we can't be open-minded to the kind of vehicles that we use to get around the community. I appreciate the comments made by council there and the fact that they brought it back up for discussion. That's great. I'd encourage everyone to check out the Alaska DMV website. There's a whole section in there about APVs that outlines the regulations and the rules and the requirements. You have to have a driver's license. You have to have insurance. You have to have a license, regular license plate on the back of it. So it should be treated the same as any other vehicle in the community. Arguably, a motorcycle on two wheels is probably more dangerous to drive around than on four wheels. So I've been riding motorcycle out here for a long time. And obviously, you're going to pick and choose, you know, your battles with that. There's some days that aren't appropriate to go ride on a motorcycle. And so I feel that people are going to look at it the same way, whether they're on a four wheeler or side by side or whatever. So I encourage you guys to support this and make it to a second reading so there's more opportunity for the community to speak on this. I appreciate your time and letting me speak tonight. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Travis. Anyone else on city?
no one else here on Zoom, but I believe Mr. Chastain is here in person and would like to provide a comment too.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. I appreciate the dialogue tonight. You guys, most of my questions were answered. Councilmember Coleman, I appreciate you bringing up the Section B where it talks about public property. That was a concern of mine when I read through the proposed ordinance, and that I spent, I think, right about 8 years as a police officer up here, 3 as a reserve, 5 as a full-time officer, and I believe the roads are public property. I think Title 38 of Alaska statute covers public lands, which talks about the acquisition of roads and highways, and they're public. So that would be my concern, but sounds like that might get taken care of. Seems like the easiest way to take care of it would just simply to strike that section, and then it would be open. The concern about driving on private property and in a park or a public property like that, I think is covered by existing statute already. I remember during my time as a police officer up here, the Department of Public Safety successfully prosecuted people for felony crimes related to driving their vehicles off-road on private property. Again, they were successfully prosecuted for that. Currently, in the last probably 8 years, I've spent my career in safety and compliance for both the fishing industry and for one of the over-the-road trucking companies here in Alaska. And as it relates to a safety concern, slow-moving vehicles would be one of the things that comes to the top of my head. If you have a side-by-side that's going 20 miles an hour in a 30, and you have a fully loaded semi coming up driving 30 miles an hour, sure, they're going to slow down, but it's going to incite people to go around and so on. There's laws on the books that cover that. If you're holding more than 5 people back, you have to pull off on the side of the road. If you're going too slow, you can get a ticket for going too slow, just like you can for going too fast. I think if this ordinance does go through, it's going to take public education and enforcement of the existing laws that we already have. I appreciate the city attorney mentioning his theory in crafting this, and that keeping it simple is the way to go. As a person that previously enforced these ordinance, the more simple the ordinance is, the easier it is for everybody to understand, and the more likely you generate voluntary compliance. Looking at the laws, if this does go through, the vehicles are going to have a headlight, a taillight, insurance, plates, and all that. I think if we were to rate the hazard, I think, like Travis mentioned, a motorcycle would be more hazardous than a side-by-side. So I appreciate the dialogue tonight. Thank you for listening to me. Thank you for looking at the Section B that talks about the prohibition of driving on public property. I appreciate that.
Hey, thank you. Anyone else in chambers or on the phone?
Good. Hello, my name is Landon Shishnikov, and I'm in support of this. Like most of you guys have been saying, keep it simple, follow the laws that are already there. I don't think you need to do much more than that. And I just spent half my summer in Kodiak, and there's a lot more people, a lot more big trucks, a lot more everything on the road. They have stop lights, actual lights, and a lot more crossways and stuff. And I've even asked around while I was there, and it seems they haven't had any problems with big trucks or accidents or anything like that. And I think we're so much smaller, less of a speed limit. I don't think we would have a problem either if we just followed all the same laws that we have now. It would bring a lot more things for people to do on nice days, like Tom was saying. And yeah, I agree with this. I hope it passes. I hoped it passed years ago and it brought up. So I'm just here again saying I agree with it. So thank you.
Thanks. Anyone else in chambers or online?
This is Sam. I'm going to sign off shortly, but I did want to add that the code at 1532040 regarding parks, at a different title altogether, but even the Unalaska City Code already does have a pretty robust prohibition on motorized vehicles in parks. So that further tends to go to say we can probably do away with B and not lose a whole lot of ground at all or any.
Okay, thank you. Okay. I'll request a motion and a second to return to regular session.
I make a motion to return to regular session.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Nicholson, second by Councilman Longo. Was there any objection to going back to regular session? Hearing no objections, we're back on the regular agenda. Persons wishing to speak on the regular agenda, I must sign up with the city clerk. First item is unfinished business, ordinance 2024-11. Second reading, approving the zoning amendment from Marine Dependent Industrial to Open Space District for approximately 300.396 acres bordering the south side of McLeese Lake. I have a motion and a second to adopt the ordinance 2024-11.
I make a motion to adopt ordinance 2024-11.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Longo, second by Councilman Coleman. I'll turn this over to the acting city manager to introduce.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So this ordinance approves a zoning amendment on the south side of McLeese Lake from Marine Dependent Industrial to Open Space District. The zoning change, which was brought forth and recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission, came about after a properly noticed public hearing and resolution of the Planning and Zoning Commission. The zoning change better reflects the present use of the land and recognizes the significance of the area to our community members for subsistence fishing and other recreational and cultural uses. First reading was already accomplished on September 10th, and the public hearing was completed earlier this evening, so the ordinance is ready for adoption.
Okay, thank you. Council discussion on ordinance 2024-11. Comments, Councilman Coleman?
Yes, this has all been reviewed by our Planning Commission, and I'm going to support their recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? All right, thank you. City Clerk, has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one signed up for this.
All right, thank you. I'll request a roll call vote on ordinance 2024-11.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Sir Tongo?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Thank you. With a roll call vote of 6 yeses and 0 nays, the council has adopted ordinance 2024-11. New business, item B, ordinance 2024, first reading, amended Title 15 of Unalaska Code of Ordinance to reduce the minimum height for address numbers on buildings from 5.25 inches to 4 inches. We have a motion to introduce the ordinance 2024-12 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on the October 8, 2024 meeting.
I move to introduce ordinance 2024-12 and schedule it for public hearing and second reading on October 8, 2024.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Tungle, second by Councilman Nicholson. I'll turn this over to City Manager or Assistant. Acting city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So our city code presently sets a minimum height for house numbers at 5 1/4 inches. The local emergency planning committee received a grant to provide house numbers in town, and the most readily available numbers are 4 inches. For that reason, LAPC requested a code change to a minimum of 4 inches. The city supports the efforts of the LAPC to have reflective numbers on all the houses in order to aid emergency responders. Our fire and police departments, as well as Public Works, all agree with the requested code change and don't see any problems with it. The proposed ordinance also removes an outdated section of code that was only effective for a year after adoption about the planning department providing house numbers. And so that's long past, so we're just going to delete that. And staff recommends adoption.
Thank you. Any council discussion? Councilman Coleman and then Councilman Tungo.
Do we know why it was set at 5 1/4 inches specifically? Was there any significance to that particular value that you might know of?
Not that I'm aware of. And I see our planning director who put this together and studied it shaking his head no, but we don't know why it was set at 5 1/4 inches. But, you know, I did think it was significant that our police department, our fire department, and also public works all had no problem with a change to 4 inches.
Okay, thank you. Councilman Tungle, then.
Are they providing all those numbers and stuff to put on their...
LEPC got a grant.
Okay.
To supply house numbers, reflective house numbers.
So, yes. They're going to be... supplying them and installing them, or so they'll be visible so when they respond?
I know they're going to be supplying the house numbers. That's the purpose of this ordinance, to allow them to get the 4-inch ones that they could find. What their plans are to actually install them, I don't know.
Thank you.
Those that have the 5-inch now would have to change their numbers?
No, this just sets a minimum height. It's okay if they're bigger.
All right, thank you. Any further discussion? City Clerk, is anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, sir, no one signed up.
No one? Okay, thank you. Request a roll call vote, please.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Thank you. With this vote, council has introduced and scheduled ordinance 2024-12 for public hearing and second reading on October 8, 2024. Resolution 2020-440, authorizing the sublease agreement between Aleutian Airways and the City of Unalaska and the Tom Matson Airport Terminal Building. May I have a motion and second to adopt Resolution 2020-440?
I'll make a motion to adopt Resolution 2024-40.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Luby, second by Councilman Tungle. I'll turn this over to the City Manager for introduction.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So Raven Alaska has abandoned their lease space in the airport terminal building, and Aleutian Airways would like to lease this space. Normally, the city would conduct a public process allowing submission of proposals from potential tenants. The leasing of municipal land or assets requires some sort of public process. In this case, we're requesting that the City Council fulfill that public process by authorizing the city to sublease without going through the RFP process indicated in code. The space is dedicated for airlines, ticketing, baggage, and operations, and there are no other airlines requesting to lease the space. And the city attorney has reviewed this matter and indicated that this resolution fulfills the requirements of code. So council could choose to postpone this action or require the RFP process. However, staff does recommend adoption and the leasing of the space to Aleutian Airways.
Okay, thank you. Council discussion. Councilman Tungo.
I'll be in full support of this. They're the only scheduled airlines that we have. I mean, there's no brainers to even put it on RFP. What do we expect to bid on it? So I say I'll be in full support of this.
Great. Thank you. Councilman Bell?
Yeah, I'll just make a quick comment just because of the last time we had, I think it was even the last meeting, a concern about sole sourcing. But this is kind of the opposite scenario here where, you know, air travel is so critical to this community, and there's no other airlines knocking the door down trying to get in here, that it makes sense to not go through the RFP process. So I'll support this. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Anyone else? Any more, Council? I think it's a good idea. They, you know, they may not be here next year, but for now, we got to keep them happy, right? Where we're going. All right. Councilman Coleman?
Yeah, so the question is, I see that they have the valid through June 2026 to aligns with other tenants. These leases, are they generally 2 years, or is it longer, or is it, or what's the validity of not just doing it in the next year?
Are you asking why it shouldn't be shorter?
Well, yeah, I understand the urgency to move it over now, but I'm just trying to understand why it's not shorter. Maybe in a few months when you do have a chance to go out to bid, if that, you know, comes to. The comment in here is that it aligns with other tenants. So my first question is, these generally go out for 2 years?
I don't know the term, but I do understand the expediency of having all the leases on the same term when they all expire at the same time. Peggy, if you could come up and tell me how long your leases normally are.
We typically run these on all the subleases at the airport, typically run on a 3-year cycle.
Okay. So this is more because it gets it in line with the others.
The lease agreement process with the state of Alaska can typically be very, very cumbersome. So we want to do them all in one fell swoop.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Council? No. Okay, so has anyone signed up to provide public comment?
No, Mayor, no one signed up to provide comment.
Okay, thank you. Shall Resolution 2024-40 authorizing the sublease agreement between Aleutian Airways and the City of Unalaska at the Tom Matson Airport Terminal Building be approved? I'll request a roll call vote.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Thank you. With this vote, the council has adopted Resolution 2024-40. Next item is council directives to the city manager. Are there any directives to the city manager?
My first one is, I move to direct the city manager to work with our federal lobbyist to prepare and submit the City of Unalaska's formal comments to NOAA regarding the draft damage assessment, restoration plan, and environmental assessment related to the Sundang IU oil spill. I can get it out. There we go.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell and seconded by Councilman Coleman. The Sundang IU recent. You have your request.
Second one.
Top one?
Number two.
Oh, okay. City of Unalaska formal comments to NOAA regarding the damage assessment and restoration plan. Yeah. Discussion? Councilman Tungle?
No, we spoke about this. I thought the lawyer going to be preparing us. It'll be nice. I'll be in support of this. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Any further comments on the directive? Thank you. And Roll call, please.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Thank you. And with the roll call vote of 6 yeses and 0 nays, the first number one directive has been approved. Councilman Bell?
This is related to the APB ordinance, and the previous request was to put it on the agenda. This is moved to direct city manager to bring to council an ordinance change to allow APB use on public roads in Unalaska.
Second.
Moved by Councilman Bell, second by Councilman Longo to approve ATV, get it on the agenda.
I'll pass it over here. Bring to council an ordinance change to allow APV use on public roads in Unalaska.
Okay, thank you. I think that's what he's doing, but that will help. Discussion? Councilman Tungle?
Are we bringing it up as a first reading for discussion, or are we bringing it up to
bring an ordinance change? Would have to be a one meeting and then the second reading.
I'll be in support of it.
Okay, thanks. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call on the directive number 2.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Nicholson?
Yes.
Mr. Longo?
Yes.
Ms. Luby?
Yes.
Ms. Coleman?
Yes.
Mr. Bell?
Yes.
Mr. Tungle?
Yes.
On a roll call vote of 6 yeses and 0 nays, directive number 2 on ATV on public roads, Unalaska City public roads, been approved. We'll move forward. Any further directives? All right, thanks. This time, community input and announcements. This is the final opportunity to provide information to the council or make announcements. State your name and business. John?
I fully support Lucian Eric getting this space at the airport. It's important to the community. I understand that. But I want to caution the council, too, about sole sourcing. Without reaching out and letting people know you have something available, you don't know that you have anybody else without or with an interest. Maybe Ace Cargo, who hauls a significant number of people in here. There's Grant. There's Denina. There are other carriers. So just in the future, you might keep that in mind. Without advertising, you don't know. And secondary writing on the heels of that is Northport Rentals went through credit process. We had at one point assumed through discussions that we're going to be able to assume a lease at the airport. That didn't work out, and the city was adamant that we had to go through a public process of competition in appealing for that space. Didn't work out for us. No hard feelings over it, but past precedence was that, you know, everyone was considered. So just kind of a note of caution, and don't want our memory to be lost. But thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any further comments? Okay. Well, thank you. Next item is, are there any written comments or anybody on Zoom?
No, sir. No more additional public comment.
Our next item is, thank you very much. The next item is the executive session, and we have a motion to go into executive session.
I move to enter into executive session to discuss personal financial matters related to the PSEA contract negotiations, which is discussed in public might negatively impact the interest of the city. Present in the executive session will be the mayor, council members, acting city manager, Marjorie Veter, police chief, Kim Hankins, fire chief, Ben Knowles, and the city attorney, John Fetchter.
Okay. Thank you.
Second.
Seconded by Councilman Tungle. There's no objections. Hearing no objections, we're in executive session at 8:05 p.m.
Take a break.
And you get 2 minutes. 2 minutes.